So our friend Bruce Feiler is always searching. He's the guy who walked the Bible and explored the story of Abraham, the father of all faiths. But then Bruce wondered about his own parenting. Why can't I wrangle 2 5-year-old twins? Why am I fighting with my adult siblings over a nephew texting at the dinner table? He set out to find what makes families happy. He learned about business practices like agile management, new military thinking called sense-making, and from extreme sports, the importance of carrying a log. Bruce's wife, Linda Rotenberg, and his daughters, Eden and Tybee, began to put these best practices into practice. They came up with a family mission statement, had meetings at which the girls were encouraged to critique the parents' performance. Yikes. Bruce tells it all in The Secrets of Happy Families, Improve Your Working, Rethink Family Dinner, Fight Smarter, Go Out and Play, and much more. And Bruce Feiler and his wife, Linda Rotenberg, join us in the studio. Welcome.
Great
to see you.
Nothing. I love coming on here and now, so I'm happy to be here.
I will not stop you from saying that. Thank you. But people might be saying, we know about this, you know, lists for chores and family meetings. But you go so far beyond that. You start with this thing called agile management. It moved from Japanese car makers to software manufacturers to a family in Idaho. The dad even wrote a paper, Agile Practices for Families. So, Bruce, start there. What is agile management and how does that transfer to families?
Well, I think it's a way of addressing what all parents were feeling. And I think I just will set the table for this conversation like you set the table for the week and say we were frustrated, not just by the chaos in our homes, but by the fact that parents are in this straitjacket, that the only ideas we're allowed to implement must come from what I call the family improvement business, right? The shrinks and self-help gurus and other other family experts. Whereas in every other area of contemporary life, Robin, from business to sports to the military, there are all these new ideas. They've been tested. And Linda was very open to this, but she made one condition. I want to know other families that are doing it. So as you mentioned, the book opens in Idaho with this family putting these agile ideas into place. And what agile does is it says, you don't just have big, grand schemes. Basically, it grew out of software where everything was laid and over budget and just failed. It says you need to adapt in real time. Everything is done in 2-week chunks. So we have this family meeting that you mentioned. We do it every Sunday night. We've done it for 3 years. And growing out of Agile, we ask 3 questions. What worked well in our family? What didn't work well? And what will we improve on in the week ahead? And I think here's the larger point. And the larger point is, we have our jobs. We work on those. We have our hobbies. We work on those. We have our bodies. We work on those. We know from research that families are central to our happiness, but we spend precious little time working on them. And what we have just realized is if you take small steps, you can actually make your family happy.
Oh, okay. Because this idea of agile management is this, the flow of ideas, not just from the top down, which it's always been the sort of patriarchal, if you compare it to the family, the boss tells you what to do and you do it. Businesses are adapting a bottom up idea.
Yes.
They're dividing people into little teams. They're, like treating them like scrums and rugby instead of just a huge mass of workers with a leader at the top. These things are getting applied to family. So, Linda, pick up one thing we just heard. You are now having this family meeting at which you ask your girls, your little girls, critique me, Mom. And they say things like, Mom, you did not buy the milk this week. This has got to be hard to hear a critique of parents.
Well, and definitely involved some change on our behalf, too. But we decided as a group 1 week to work on overreacting. And the girls made it clear that this applied to parents, too. But what was so incredible to watch was the girls taking ownership of this process, of building this family culture, and they started holding each other accountable. So Bruce was walking out the door one day, and the girls were having a fight, and one of them started screaming, and the other twin said, overreaction, overreaction, and started counting, 1, 2, and within 10 seconds, the tantrum had ended, which never happens at our house. So watching the girls co-create this family culture has really opened our mind.
And here's the thing, Robin, and that is that research backs this up. Okay, the latest brain research in children shows that kids who plan their own goals, set their own schedules, evaluate their own work are building up their prefrontal cortex and taking more responsibility. You can't just get your kids to 16 and say, okay, you guys go out and make decisions if you've not given them practice. And so what this does in a controlled environment, we actually get them involved even in picking their own rewards and punishments.
Well, this was amazing because, again, this is, again, the bottom-up thinking that the kids are part of forming their culture. And part of that was deciding, well, if we do something wrong, what is the punishment? And you said, Bruce, that you discovered your children were little Stalins.
They're much stricter than we would ever be. And we're working on overreacting this week. Linda mentioned our family meeting just a few days ago. And they said if they get, you know, 5 minutes or fewer of overreacting, that they would get a sleepover. And then the other daughter says, is that 1 5-minute overreaction or 10 30-second overreactions? And to me, that's the success right there, to see their minds kicking in. And their reward, if they get fewer than 15 minutes, their punishment was to have one push-up for every minute over 15.
There were a lot of push-ups that week.
We don't know what motivates them. We don't have access to them. I think, Linda, nothing is top. You've mentioned this three times, Robin. Politics is not top down. Religion is not top down. Business is not top down. At MIT, they did this research that shows the most successful teams do not have a charismatic leader. The team members spend as much time talking to one another as to the leader. That's where society is going, and we need a way to make it function in families.
Yeah, but I can just hear somebody saying, yeah, but I don't have time for when it goes wrong. So for instance, Linda, the kids were able to decide what their own lists are in the morning of what they have to do in the morning to get themselves out of the door. And, on that list, make sure you pack this for lunch, make sure you do this. And by the way, lists also have become spreadsheets in this thinking. It's more of a list of in addition to the what you have to do to get out in the morning, there might be a list of what you plan to do that week, how well you're doing it, and then an assessment of how it went. I can see someone saying, you know what? I just don't have time for it to go wrong, for that child not to have breakfast 5 days in a row.
I was the skeptic because I run the breakfasts in the morning and I get the girls out to school every day. And so I was very skeptical until it started working. And Bruce says it cut parental screaming, meaning my screaming, in half. So that was good enough for me. And the girls, loved the idea of checking off their own lists. And they started making little flowers and little signs. And so the pride they took in getting it done, they were opening the shutters. They were doing things they had never done in their lives. But for me, what the proof was we got to school on time every day. That had never happened in a week. So that was good enough for me.
Well, but what about the week that they didn't have lunch for 4 days in a row because they forgot? I mean, Bruce, jump in with this because you met other families.
Failure.
I don't know of a week where we didn't get lunch made, but here's what we're doing here. There are 200 ideas in this book. Some may work for your family, some not. I guarantee you pick three, you'll have a happier family in a week.
That's Bruce Freiler. And before that, Linda Rotenberg, his wife. Their book is The Secrets of Happy Families. And we're going to talk more about how these practices that Bruce found traveling the country, talking to military leaders, extreme sports. What do you do with a log? We want to find out. We'll take a minute break. Be right back with both Bruce and Linda and The Secrets of Happy Families in 1 minute here and now.
Funding for Here and Now comes from MathWorks, creators of MATLAB and Simulink technical computing software, accelerating the pace of discovery in engineering and science. Find over 200 job openings at MathWorks.com.
Welcome back to our conversation with Bruce Feiler and his wife, Linda Rotenberg. Bruce's new book is The Secrets of Happy Families. Improve your mornings, rethink family dinner, fight smarter, go out and play, and much more. On the family dinner part, Bruce talked to specialists who said if you can't make it to dinner, make it a family breakfast. Little things like changing the furniture that you sit on, Bruce, when you're disciplining children.
Love this idea. It's one of my three favorite ideas from the whole book is I talked to this environmental psychologist who said that showed me this research that if you sit on a hard surface in front of a rigid table, you'll be more rigid. If you're on cushioned surfaces, you'll be more open-minded. She said when you're disciplining your children, if you sit on a cushioned surface, the conversation will go better. She looked at where my wife and I have what I call the 742 fight, which was the nightly discussion about who's dropping off the dry cleaning or picking up the shin guards for soccer. We actually moved where we have it because research shows between 6 and 8 is the highest tension time in families. So we move it to a different time of day when everyone's fed and relaxed, change clothes. And I was at my desk, computer equipment, big desk. She was in this old IKEA chair about a foot lower. Turns out I was in the power position and she was resentful. So we moved because if you sit – so we now sit side by side on a cushioned window bench that we have in our home. And just yesterday, Robin, we sat down with our girls and went over their report cards. If you're across from somebody, you'll be more confrontational. If you're alongside someone, you'll be more collaborative. The point is, there's all this new thinking out there. We got to bring it into families. Just as I was walking into the studio, your producer said to me that he had been dreading having the sex talk with his 8-year-old.
It's not one talk, you say.
It's a series of talks. But here was my pro tip for him. Do it. Don't sit across from your child when you want to have a serious conversation like this, especially teenagers, because it provokes confrontation, right? Do it when you're do it alongside them. If you're folding the laundry or loading the dishwasher, cars are great because everyone can look their own way,
yeah,
and they're trapped. But if you don't want to sit down and say, this is really meaningful to me, you want to actually be more relaxed,
right,
and do it in a casual moment. The conversations will go
next
better.
Next to each other and on upholstered chairs. But Linda, as we're talking about also this, you know, studying how businesses and the military are having more of a bubbling up from beneath culture as opposed to a ideas all coming from the top down. So this is changing in your family. Address the one thing that I hear is the hardest: texting and too much TV time. What do you do?
Well, again, we brought the girls into the conversation, so we don't have texting yet because we're
there,
8.
Yeah.
But let me bring in something else, which was chores. We felt they needed to be doing more chores. Bruce will address the texting, and they said, "You know what? What a terrible name. We're never going to do something called chores. It's boring. How about calling it awesome stuff to make our house more awesome?" They started doing it. Bruce, do you want to address the texting
issue? And what about
issue?
The texting,
yeah,
and the TV?
Here's what the research shows that I've been very persuaded by, which is that families need to spend less time worrying about what they do wrong and more time building up what they do right. So texting and being online is a reality for children of a certain age. The thing to do is to make sure that you are having no texting time at some time of day. And you mentioned the dinner. I want to double back to that. You know, all parents have heard that dinner is important, and yet it doesn't work for many of our schedules. Linda doesn't even come home until after 6:30 at night. Turns out there's only 10 minutes of meaningful conversation in any meal. The rest is taken up with take your elbows off the table and pass the ketchup.
And stop texting.
Exactly. You can take that 10 minutes and put it any time. So if they need to be texting in the afternoon, say, we're going to have a no texting, we're going to have a bedtime snack between 8:30 and 8:40 or between 9 and 9:20, whatever it is that can work. You can time shift. You want to make sure you have 10 to 20 minutes of productive time every day. And here's the thing. What you talk about matters more than what you're doing in these meetings. And this is my favorite tip from the entire book. You should talk about your family history. You mentioned sense-making. Make sense of your family. Researchers at Emory gave kids a do-you-know test. Do you know where your grandparents were born, where your parents went to high school, an aunt who had a difficult illness that they overcame? Kids who knew more about their family history had more self-confidence. So it was the number one predictor of emotional well-being. So tell the story of your family's positive moments. Also the negative ones, how they overcame them. It'll give kids confidence when they face their own hurdles.
By the way, this phrase, I remember this came from the military,
yeah,
actually, that the military is less likely to have a drill sergeant,
yep,
barking orders, mom and dad, can you listen, feel like that, as opposed to someone telling someone why it's important, what the values are, this idea of sense-making. And it's happening in the military. It's tied to having a mission statement. Yeah. Linda, what's your family mission statement?
May our first word be adventure and our last word love. And it comes from something Bruce said when the girls were 6 months old. But when Bruce said we were going to build a family mission statement, I said, this is corny. He said, yeah, but we're corny. But we're hearing from so many people who are doing these things because they said, you know what? How can we assume our kids know what the values are? Just like companies need to go through their corporate values exercises, let's talk about what our values are so we can have something to refer to.
And taking the shame away from what might have been failure in the family and making it overcoming that family to failure to continue as a family.
The more you talk about failure, in your example, we sat down when we went through, this is something I would never have done, Robin, when we went through our report cards with our girls yesterday, one of the comments was that one of them was afraid to fail. She was a perfectionist. And we said in this conversation just yesterday, I'm looking at Linda, was, I want you to come to us in the next 2 months, tell us something that you tried and failed at, and if you tried and failed 3 times, we're going to give you a reward. We're actually rewarding failure because we have been persuaded by the research. Grit comes from getting through a difficult period.
Oh, there's so much here. The log.
Yeah, I got to mention the log.
We only have about a minute, but the log, there's this sort of group forming exercises that are going on where people go through this kind of survival thing with coaches out in the streets of New York and other places. And one of the best ways to pull a group together is to have them carry a log.
The three big themes I learned from this book, Robin, are families, they adapt all the time. They talk a lot. They go out and play. So you want to play, and nothing makes an us better than a them. So divide your family into two teams and have people of different generations, or get the log. What the log is, you have to carry this log. They do it for hours, but the point is you make these connections, you're forced to bond. You want to build that family bond so when you have difficulty, you know the kids have confidence, they can get through it.
I have to go find a log. It's quite something. The book is The Secrets of Happy Families. Again, improve your mornings, rethink family dinner, fight smarter, go out and play, and much more. Ideas maybe not for everyone, but maybe a couple for you. And as you acknowledge, you know, dysfunctional families, there's a lot of pain in a lot of families, but maybe trying one of these things. Bruce Feiler, Linda Rotenberg. And by the way, on our website, where they'll be appearing in the Boston area tonight, thanks so much, both of you.
Great to be with you. Thank you.
Thank you.